would like to welcome all of you to this meeting of Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises. You know, one thing that made Sepp Blatter at the end of the World Cup tournament declare that South Africa had really done an outstanding job.
Did I hear you clearly say that it's late, Sepp Blatter?
I didn't say late. I didn't say late. I said that made Sepp Blatter. When he announced that and gave us 9 out of 10 points for our organizing of the soccer tournament, it was because of the way we were one as a nation in our preparation for that tournament. And what we are trying to do today is to actually bring back that spirit that made us or made the world to agree that we did an outstanding job. This is even a bigger project that we are undertaking, the Transnet and ESCO in particular. So what the committee wants to do is for us to be part of this process of unfolding this infrastructure rollout. So hence we we invited you to come to Parliament at some point during the preparations for the World Soccer Tournament. Had sent out members of Parliament to the provinces that were hosting or the cities that were hosting these matches to go and look at the readiness, how ready these cities are, where there are blockages, what are these, and how can we unblock this to make sure that when it's kickoff time, everything is in place. So that's the reason why we invited you here today, so that we are ourselves, and that includes you. When I say ourselves, I include yourself as ESCOM, that we are all satisfied that we are ready to undertake this mammoth task, and where there are challenges, that we can together put our heads together to make sure that we will meet our targets, dates, and everything. Before we get into apologies, let us introduce ourselves so that we know who all are here. My name is Peter Maluleka. I'm a member of this committee.
My name is Tisang Mutsi, and I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning. I'm Gloria Borman, a member of this committee.
Good morning. Gerard Koornhof, a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Aubrey, a member of this portfolio committee.
Good morning. My name is Chris Hululu, member of this committee.
Good morning. Rose Sonto, a member of the committee.
Let's go to the gentleman behind you. So, Manelisa.
Good morning. My name is Dubasa from the SADC.
Thank you.
Good morning, Goedemorgen. Erik Marais, also a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Eric Foscati. I'm a researcher for the committee.
Good morning. My name is Thomas from CNBC Africa.
Good morning. I'm Nancy Ferrara from SABA.
I'm Chantal Presence from Eyewitness News.
Okay.
Chantal Presence from Eyewitness News.
Hello, I'm from the New Age.
Onyake from PMG.
Sam Anjuana from the Department of Public Enterprises Ministry.
Justice Mavungu, ESCOM.
Karen de Villiers from ESCOM.
Paul O'Flaherty, the Finance Director from ESCOM.
Tom Muchita, from the Department of Public Enterprises.
At the back there.
Let's go from the first DP.
Good morning.
Those who are from the DPE, from ESCOM, I'm going to ask you not to sit at the back, but come to the front here. If you could come to the front. In fact, in future, we'll ask the media to go to the back, and then you'll sit here. Do we have any apologies?
The apologies I've received is from Mr. Chikobo, who is not, and Mr. Nara, they have both been moved off the seat.
Honorable September?
Honorable September and Ms. Michael, they are delayed. They will be
Honorable September, is she not in Dubai? Is she not working?
Oh, she's in Chintu, Dubai, yeah.
Honorable Marais?
Member Marcos only flying in this morning. He's had a
evening
last
away.
Night, so just a minute.
Okay. Mr. O'Flaherty, we know him.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you for the invitation and to the Portfolio Committee as well. We're going to take you through our capacity expansion program, and as the Chairman rightfully pointed out, it's a massive program. But in the context of Transnet, this particular program actually began in 2005, and I just want to reflect on a bit of that as well. Just in terms of our value chain, Eskom is a vertically integrated utility, as you're aware, so we cover everything from construction right through the sourcing of primary energy through transmission, distribution, generation, and ultimately to our customers. As you're aware, there is a bill that the independent system operator will ultimately be spun out of Eskom. At the moment, it is created as a division. I think to put us in context and to explain our capacity expansion program is that Eskom is not a contractor. We're not a construction company. What we are and what we are gearing ourselves up to be and what we've been using the lessons learned since we began this program is that we're actually an EPCM. That means we get involved in the engineering and the design. We get involved in the procurement and the awarding of the packages, and we manage those packages. So we're an engineering, procurement, and construction management company as opposed to a contractor. And that's a very important point because we don't have complete oversight around the subcontractor element behind the contractors or the people that they employ. So we manage the contractors who are directly contracted to us. To put it in context of this program, as I said, which began in 2005, is the total estimated cost when we complete this program in 2018, when we finish off Kusile, is around 340 billion rand. And I think it must be borne in mind, as I'll show on the next slide, that Eskom built significant capacity between the 70s and the 90s, and then right up until certainly in the 90s and the early 2000s, Eskom actually didn't build any extra capacity, as you can see on the top left. And so what happened as a company is that EPCM capability was lost, and that's the reality of the situation. So when Eskom was asked to begin the build program in 2005, we've had to spend a lot of time building up our strength and our capacity in this area. And one of the things that we would like to highlight both to our fellow state-owned companies and certainly when some of these presidential infrastructure projects roll out is there's a lot of lessons we've learned. And there's a lot of lessons that we've captured, and those must be used by everybody to make sure that the same issues don't arise again. On the next slide, so in terms of Medupi and Kusile in particular, once we've completed these power stations, in terms of coal-fired power stations, they'll be the third and the fourth largest in the world. And when I start giving you some of the statistics, you'll see that the complexity and the size of what we're talking about is that if you take an average World Cup soccer stadium, which was around 4 or 5 billion at worst, a Medupi will cost you 100 billion rand, and a Kusile will cost you 120 billion rand, and a Gautrain at last, when I read the paper, was around 25, 30 billion. So the size and the scale of what we're trying to do here is significant. So as Eskom, we have aligned ourselves to be an EPCM. We've spent a lot of time structuring how we do the contracts, and we've made sure that skills development and localization is an absolute cornerstone to these projects, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And we've already started delivering. Since 2005, we've completed over 5,200 megawatts of power that we've added to the grid. We've close to, we're just over 3,000 kilometers of transmission lines, and we've added close to 18,000 MVAs of substations. So we're a company that has delivered to date. In terms of our current six-year capacity expansion program, it must be remembered that Eskom is not only involved in a capacity expansion program. We spend a significant amount of money in refurbishment of our generation fleet and the strengthening and refurbishment of our transmission and distribution network. And in distribution alone, we're intending to spend over the next 5 years approximately 10 billion rand per annum, which is sizable just in its own right. And I think that needs to be borne in mind. So there's a lot of complexity in Eskom. At any point in time, in terms of how we classify a project, Eskom is involved in around 3,000 projects every single day. And that can range from refurbishing a substation to a Medupi. So it's a significant amount of what Eskom is. So Eskom is not just an electricity provider. We're actually a significant EPCM. In terms of our benchmarking, we continue to benchmark ourselves. We continually go overseas. We visited a number of coal-fired power stations in Europe last year and in India. And last week, we conducted a construction and excellence program where we invited a lot of the European and Indian utilities who are currently building coal-fired power stations. We invited them to an Indaba that we had in Pretoria to talk about common issues that we're challenged with. And good or bad, we faced with the same issues, which was very, very interesting. And in that forum, we had the Chinese were not there, so that's obviously a big part that's excluded. But in that forum, we had companies that represent one-third of the entire coal-fired power stations that are being built today around the world. So there was a lot of lessons to be discussed and learned. And we continue to do this and benchmark and continue to benchmark ourselves. And again, we've introduced over these last few years a lot better analysis of how we would undertake projects. You know, we often get asked, and this will be very important for the integrated resource plan once we know the allocations, is if you had to build a coal-fired power station tomorrow, or you had to start transmission lines tomorrow, or you had to even get involved in a nuclear program, how would you do it as Eskom? And so we've spent a lot of time developing toolkits for ourselves as to how to project management. So we've developed a lot of capability, processes, manuals, lots of training courses. Later this year, we're launching a construction management and project management academy, because we see there's a significant shortage in South Africa of project management, contract management, and construction management skills. So we're spending a lot of time around that and making sure that ultimately, as the RRP comes out eventually, that Eskom is positioned to do what it needs to do. But in terms of our program, which started in 2005, as you can see there, we had the return to service stations. We're the only company, well, utility in the world that took power stations out of that were decommissioned and brought them back. And there was Komati, Camden, and Grootvlei, and I'll talk about the status of that, and that's 3,700 megawatts. Obviously, we're busy with the big baseload stations, which is Medupi, Kusile, and that's 9,564 megawatts. And peaking and renewables, our big peaking station is our Angula station in Ladysmith, and we're also busy in the execution phase in the Sierra wind of 100 megawatts, and we're also looking at a pilot concentrated solar power plant at this point. We've also, in previous years, brought open cycle gas turbine plants, which are peaking plants, already into operation. That was Ankerlich and Gerikwa. And then we continually look at our power stations to enhance their capacity. And this year just gone past, we added, for an example, an extra 30 megawatts onto Arnott. So you can constantly retrofit and make sure you get maximum capacity about what you have. And then transmission line projects is significant. It's a 4,700-kilometer project. Obviously, to our regulator and to the public, we every year publish our transmission development plan, which is a 10-year plan. And we've completed a significant amount of that, but that'll be ongoing. And one of our big challenges at the moment, which we're ready for, is to make sure we can connect all the new independent power producers that need to come on the grid, and we are heavily involved in that. In terms of our generation projects, you can see the spread. Obviously, the coal fields of Mpumalanga and Limpopo for Medupi, and we have an operating power station there of Matimba. And then you can see our peaking, which is in KwaZulu-Natal. In terms of our transmission projects, we're involved in significant projects, not only making sure that Medupi can integrate the grid, which by itself is a significant project. The Medupi integration is 3 billion rand just on its own. And Kusile integration, Angula integration. But we have to strengthen the 765 kV lines all the way to the Cape and the southern grid and the eastern grid. So significant amount of work that's ongoing in that area. What about the challenges? If we look back, and, you know, we don't always want to look back. We want to look forward because we need to deliver these stations. But when Eskom began this program in 2005, the world was a different place. There was a boom. And so to find contractors, it was a contractor's world. So to make sure you had the right terms and conditions and you could get the contractors at the right price was a challenge for Eskom. It wasn't the world that we sit in today. So global demand for new plant was high, supply market was global and limited, and what happened because of the boom that was going on, the shortage of skills was significant. So Eskom was competing globally to try and attract skills. And there was a massive increase in demand at that time for power plants, and so definitely a seller's market. Our timelines are very tight, and you know, I don't need to repeat what we've said to this particular committee before and many other committees, is that when we began these power stations, particularly in Medupi, we began it in virtual design. So the biggest lesson learned there is we did not do appropriate front-end planning to make sure the power station could be delivered. We had to plan as we go because of the significant position we find ourselves in today. Because if we had spent an additional 2 years doing the planning, that would have been great, but we wouldn't be bringing the first power to the grid next year, which is what we planned. So we've learned a lot of lessons out there and made a lot of mistakes. In terms of the funding, that was also a problem because in 2005 through to 2010, we had an erratic tariff determination with the regulator. And certainly up to 2009, the Board of Eskom actually put Kusile project on hold because Eskom would not have been a going concern at that time. And so we spent a significant amount in 2010 with the Department of Public Enterprise and the National Treasury in putting a funding plan in place. And you'll see when I talk about it, you know, we're pleased to announce at Eskom that as we sit today, more than 77% of our funding to finish off Kusile is completely secured, and the rest has been identified. So we see no issues from a funding perspective to finish off up until the end of Kusile. Safety is a key challenge for Eskom, not only in the capacity expansion program, but in the entire capital program and in the entire operations of Eskom. Our fatalities are too high, and our incident rates are too high. But having said that, our capacity expansion program has performed extremely well in terms of safety. And even when we've benchmarked ourselves and had international visitors, one of the first things they do compliment us on is our safety record. And when the committee visits, you'll be able to see that in action. Skills development has been a significant part of this build program. I'll give you some of the numbers of jobs that have been created and skills that have been developed. But I must again highlight that Eskom is an EPCM. We're not a construction company. And one of our biggest challenges is going to be as the laborers and the workforce starts finishing off various of the units, what's the next sustainable projects that we can make sure that the people who've been trained can be used on? And that's a challenge for all of us. Project management, I've spoken about. We're getting better. We're a hell of a lot better than we were last year, and today we're better than we were yesterday. And we continually learn and continually improve in what we've got to do. So there you can see when we're expecting our commissioning to come in. Madupi's first unit will come in 2013, and the remaining units will be between 6 to 9 months thereafter. Kusile's first unit will come in December 2014, and again, it's about an 8-month program between those units, and there is a space to potentially accelerate. And then in Gudo, we're expecting the entire plant at 3 units, it's a peaking plant, those to come in 2014. And you can see some of the major contractors, and we'll talk about the local content. In terms of size, just to put it in a bit of scale, possibly one of the world's largest projects going on at the moment is the Three Gorges Dam in China. If you add Madupi, Kusile, and Gulo, they're about the size of that particular project. So it's significant. And you can see some of our comparisons to Transnet and to Gautrain. This is in billions of dollars. So, you know, once again, these are significant projects. And this is an important slide as well. This is about our contracting strategy. And it will sort of maybe answer some of the questions we get a lot. In Madupi, we're running Madupi, and we've awarded 34 contract packages. So as Eskom, we manage 34 contractors. We don't manage their subcontractors, and we have no involvement, and we don't manage the people who work for them. And that's important, because the other way you could do this is as a pure contractor, where you would have 200, 300 packages. We don't have the skill to do that, and it's not efficient to do that. It's also not efficient to do it on a lump sum turnkey. In other words, there's no one today in the world you could go to and say, well, actually just take away this pain and do it all for me. Because what they would do is they would be doing the role that Eskom is doing. So we spend a lot of time making sure we have the right skills. We do have partners that we appointed right in the beginning here. In Madupi, it's PB Power, which is a subsidiary of Balfour Beatty, which is a major UK construction company. They help us project manage it. And in terms of Kusile, it's Black & Veatch, which is a significant U.S. Project management company. And you can see in terms of Kusile, we have 46 packages, and in terms of Ngula, we've got 11 packages. So it's a very important point. Another issue that's a big challenge for us is in terms of the conditions of contract in which you engage with contractors. We use a term of conditions of contract that is very favorable or well-known in Europe and the U.K., for Madupi and Kusile, and that's FIDIC. And in terms of Ngula, we use NEC. Now, NEC is something that Eskom is more affiliated with, and so we've had to spend a lot of time learning the terms and conditions of FIDIC because it's more civil-type environment contracts, and it's more well-known, certainly, to overseas contractors. So where are we at December 2011? Which is the last time we published anything. And yes, we've just finished our year end, so I'll be able to update you on that as well. As at 31 December, we have completed 5,501 of those megawatts back to the grid. You would see at that time we had already done 280. we over 500 for the year. So in the next 3 months after this, we completed over 500 megawatts that we've added to the grid. In terms of our transmission kilometers, we had completed 480 kilometers up to December, so a total of 3,747. For the year, we had gone over 600 kilometers. We went 630-odd kilometers for the full year. And in terms of the substations, we've done very well with the year. We've managed to energize some very large substations on the way to Cape Town. And we've energized in the current year, this was 275 as at 31 December. It's over 5,000 for the year. So we've done very, very well. And we've certainly beaten 18,000 MVAs in terms of the substations since inception. So we've had a good year. What's our rollout? This is what our rollout looks at. Our target for next year is 260 megawatts, and that's, and I'll talk about it. It's the remaining RTS station of 200 megawatts. So we've completed Camden, we've completed Grootvlei in the current year, and we've completed in the current year 6 units of Komati, and we have 3 left. So we've done exceptionally well, and by the end of this year, this new financial year, we will have completed all the return to service stations. You can see the Medupi, and that's where we're focusing all our attention. We're expecting Medupi to come online in 2013, and that's the first unit, and then the next unit's 6 to 9 months thereafter, as I said. So our entire focus for this year is to see what we can do around Medupi, and would it be possible to bring it in earlier than we expected, because we did have the delays on Medupi, as we've said before. And then Kusile and Ngula and Sire, our wind farm, you can see what they are. And everything I talk about today takes us to the end of Kusile. Because as a company, we have not yet been allocated anything from the integrated resource plan beyond Kusile, as we sit today. In terms of costs, excluding the interest that we capitalize in terms of accounting, Medupi, we've been consistent on this for 18 months. Is Medupi's total cost will just be under the 100 billion mark, and that includes the transmission integration, and we've certainly spent more than half. Kusile, we've at 121 billion, and the big difference between Kusile and Medupi is that we had the delays, so we placed contracts much later than Medupi, so from an escalation perspective, that's what's caused it. Plus, Kusile is the first plant that we're actually putting a flue gas desulfurization plant in it, so it costs quite a bit more than Medupi costs. In Ngula, you can see our costs going well, and the return to service stations, we should be complete in the current financial year. That's March 2013, and then the transmission line's going very well. We often get asked, well, where do your costs sit? How does a Medupi and how does a Kusile rank worldwide? Very difficult. You can use what we call an overnight cost, which is a cost of your packages today plus your contingency and don't take escalation into account, convert it to dollars. And a Medupi and Kusile, in terms of any benchmarks, and we've used EPRI, which is the Electricity Power Institute, Lazard, and the International Energy Association. And Medupi and Kusile are, when we look on a, yes, they're on the higher side, but they're certainly within the benchmarks of anything going on today. And that was confirmed last year when we went and visited the German power stations, as well as the Indian power stations, that, you know, certainly in our costs, we are being competitive. Our funding plan, this was as at December. We had secured 75%, and remember our funding plan that we put in place in 2010, we were short by 300 billion. It was a gap, we called it then. That's actually a plan. And as we sit today, we're over 77% secured. And we've identified all the rest of our sources. So we've done very well. Fortunately or unfortunately, quite a bit of that is foreign debt. And that needs to be borne in mind. So you do have the exchange rate fluctuation going forward. And the bottom line is that there's not enough capacity in the local market to fund Eskom. That's the bottom line. And the only other alternative source of funding, you have to go to the international markets. Once you go to the international markets, it's very, very important, as you've seen with SANRAL, that what you have is an investment grade rating. If you don't have an investment grade rating, very difficult to find money, and it costs you a lot. And so it's very important from an Eskom perspective that we continue on our path of solid investment grade ratings. And that will come down to a tariff discussion, which is not what today is about. In terms of just a little bit more perspective and then some of the localization initiatives, and there you can see some of the stats. I'm not an engineer, but engineers love this. You know, higher than the Sandton City Towers, third and fourth biggest coal-fired power stations, and four times more investment in the Gautrain for Medupi. Perhaps not an environmentally friendly slide, but gives you kind of the indications of the type and scale of what it is to operate these power stations and also to build it. It's just an enormous scale that this country has not seen, certainly in a very long time, and even compared to the World Cup, even if you added up that entire program. So what are we doing? We've got a significant local content. We have more than 50% of all the contracts placed for Medupi, Kusile, and Gula that are local. We have, in terms of the jobs we've created, and I'll go into that, we've created more than 30,000 direct jobs as we sit today. We have made significant contributions, obviously, not only to the economy in general, but to the areas in which we are building these power stations. I just want to talk a little bit about that. So there you can see, as we are placed today, so we've placed all the contracts on Medupi, most on Kusile and most on Ngula. And you can see the significant local content. That's awarded to local South African companies. And there, yes, there is a foreign component behind a number of these jobs, but that's just the scale and the intensity of what you're trying to create. In terms of when we do award these contracts, whether it be local and particularly for the foreign contractors, we have a very key skills development and localization element that we put in these contracts and with which we manage them. And whether it be in terms of creating new fabrication facilities and whether it be in terms of creating new mechanical equipment opportunities, we manage and make sure that these foreign contractors in particular are investing the necessary money, and we're creating the necessary industry. In terms of what it means from a graduates and artisans, on our calculations, is that Medupi, in terms of engineering skills, project planning, project managers, we consume about almost half of a year's entire university program graduates for a Medupi. That's how significant it is. About 48% of the year's artisan outputs needs to be done available to do a Medupi. And we've invested a lot of money and we've co-opted with a lot of universities to grow their particular project management, construction schools, etc. And at Eskom recently, you may have read, we've opened up our own welding school. There's a significant shortage of skilled welders in the country and we've opened up our own school to assist with that. In terms of job creation, at Medupi today, it says we'll get to 19,000, but that's including the Crocodile River expansion, which is a Department of Water affairs. But at Medupi today, our contingent of staff or laborer is, worker is 15,000. Kusile, we're fast approaching 10,000 people on site. Significant, significant. Kusile's still got a way to go because it started behind Medupi, and then at Ngula, we've got about 4,000 people, finished most of the dam work, so we're now doing the tunneling work and the construction work, and so those will come off. And if you just use a multiplier of 4 from an indirect rule of thumb, it's 160,000 people that get affected directly through what's being created here. In terms of national infrastructure and other infrastructure, it's significant. I mean, there's had to be additional strengthening of roads between Richards Bay and Lephalale to make sure we can get all this equipment from the ports. There's a lot of road maintenance. Those of you who've been to Lephalale, I'm not sure when last you went, you probably won't recognize the place. Freight forwarding, trains, and then the local industries in terms of local shops, hotels, transport, vehicle maintenance, housing, significant. When last I looked, we've got a real struggle at the moment in Lephalale in finding houses. And the house prices in Lephalale are the fastest growing prices in the country. That's just the reality of when you create these massive sites. That's quite incredible. In terms of GDP, our estimation of how we affected is that this project of Medupi is adding 95%, improving GDP by 95% in Lephalali. Again, it's a question of how do you sustain it. You know, once Medupi, Matimba, those are the power stations that are there. Matimba's already there, and you've got the Grootgeluk mine, which supplies those two. So those are your three big industries. How do you then sustain it going forward? Delmas Kusile, those of you who are from Johannesburg, if you drive on either one of the highways going towards the Mpumalanga, you can see Kusile rising above, whether you're on either highway, and you can see the first boiler coming to fruition. So it's really impressive looking. And then Ladysmith Ngula. In terms of specifics, Medupi, it's a 6 units, it's 4,764. I've spoken about most of this. First construction commenced in March 2007, but the planning began in 2005. And at this stage, we're saying that between May and September 2013, we'll have power to the grid. Why were we late? A number of issues. Going back right to the stage, remember I said we did this on a virtual design. We didn't really understand the ground conditions. And so we had a problem initially. So the first part of building a power station is the civil access. You've got to level the ground and you've got to build the foundation. And so we learned a lot. We lost about 10 months looking and struggling around the civil access. That was early days. We then, in terms of our boiler contractor, we've had a lot of delays. And there was about the design wasn't frozen. The steel fabricator wasn't performing, and we've had a lot of delays. But I have to say that we've put significant pressure on our boiler contractor and their parent company from overseas, and their performance since about December of last year has been significant improvement in them, and that's giving us a lot more confidence as to this unit coming on. And in fact, in June of this year, we have a significant milestone at Medupi, which is the boiler pressure test, where we load the boiler up with water and we heat it up, and we make sure that none of the wells leak. And it's a significant test, and that's coming up soon. In terms of that boiler test, certainly some of the, as
sorry,
I said...
Chairperson, why are you laughing? We're going to come to...
I'm just out of an expression of joy. No, I'm serious. I mean, it's just we constantly, I'm a financial guy. We constantly have these comments between engineers and financial guys about how's it going to leak. But we can give you confidence. We've done a first on the superheater. We've done the first air pressure test. Do the air pressure before the water. It's 20,000 wells. Six had a problem, which we've fixed. So it's going very, very well. You can see there some of the intricate delays we've had on the boiler. I think I've spoken about that. In terms of Kusile, going much better. Learned a lot of lessons on Medupi. So the way we've planned this, the way we've got this together, the way we've managed the contractors, much better. So Kusile, no delays. The only delay we had is when we had no funds. But since that, when we sold our funding plan in 2010, this is going really, really well. In terms of Ngula, it's going well. Should be no issues. And 2014, we're confident, finished a lot of the work. And really, it's the main tunnel in the mountain. I think what's quite exciting, and I've got a picture or two, is our return to service stations. I think we forget about them. But Camden is now complete, and that was opened by the president last year. Kriflay has just been completed in this financial year, March, that's just ended. And Kamati, as I said, 6 units are done and 3 units will be finished off this year. And from a picture perspective, so this is the first time in 22 years, 3 months and 4 days that 6 units of Kamati are on load, and you can see by those lights. And that was on the 9th of February 2012. So that's a significant milestone for the country. In transmission, the lines are going well. Probably the biggest challenge here is we have is land servitudes, making sure we can get from, they see us coming, the landowners, I think we need a more appropriate way to go and expropriate land to make sure we can get these transmission lines done. Lastly, I think just a little bit about the integrated resource plan. It's been published, as you're well aware. It's the accountability of the Department of Energy. And I think all we're saying at Eskom is that we need to learn from the lessons of the past, and we need to make sure that the decisions to build whatever is required to be built need to be made soon. Because if they're not made soon, we're going to end up where we were in 2005, and that's a very important point. And you've seen this, the policy-adjusted RP, in terms of 6,300 megawatts required of coal, 9,600 megawatts of nuclear, 2,600 megawatts of hydro, 2,400 megawatts of CCGT, 3,900 of OCGT, and then a significant chunk of 17,800 megawatts of renewables, of which the DOE has already, in terms of their program, rolled out the first 1,400 megawatts previously, and I heard an announcement last night, but I didn't read it, so I'm not sure what it says. I think there's another 1,000, so that's going well. But before I come to the slide of that, maybe talk a little bit about our MYPD3, because that's important. If you recall, is that Eskom proposed to the regulator for this last year of MYPD2, which is the year from 1 April 2012 to 31 March 2013, we proposed that we reduce the tariff that was awarded to us from 25.9% to 16%. On what basis did we do that? There's really three issues. The first is the demand that we estimated at MYPD2 has not come. So the demand, the economy is not growing what we believed it would grow 3 years ago. The second is we've made significant operational savings in Eskom, particularly in our primary energy or our coal costs. And the third is we've cut significant amounts of money off our capital program because we have a lot better idea of the phasing of that capital and how much it's going to cost. And that's just through these self-improvements. And that enabled us, through the Department of Public Enterprises and the shareholder basically sacrificed their return of 8 billion rand, and that enabled us to reduce the tariff. But what's important is MYPD3. And MYPD3 will be for the period starting in 1 April 2013 and beyond. And so we've already started the engagements and we've already started the preparations. But what's important for us to Eskom is we need to constantly remind we need to move to cost-reflective tariffs. We're not at cost-reflective tariffs. We need to make sure that our investment grade rating is sound because although as we sit at the end of March, we've raised 180 billion in debt, we still have to get to 300 billion. Still a lot to put onto our balance sheets. You need cost-reflective tariffs. You need strong investment grade based on your metrics. And we need to make sure that everybody plays ball. And whether it be the coal industry, whether it be from energy efficiency, we need to make sure that that is all done. So it's a very key period for us. In all likelihood, we'll be asking for a longer tariff period than 3 years because we need to show some certainty until the end of Kusile. So we believe 5 years is a more appropriate path. And lastly, I think before I conclude, is there's the IRP and in you can see what we're saying. There's some commitments. There's some decisions that need to be made. Who's going to build the next coal station? Who's going to be doing the nuclear program? These are key decisions that need to be made, and we're hoping in the next few months that these decisions and this direction can be given. So lastly, to end off, Chairman, it's significant. We've learned a lot of lessons. We continue to learn. We're getting better. We still have a lot of risks ahead of us. These projects... you know, they may be large and long-term, but the risks are there every single day. Global financial crisis and the slowdown is a problem. I think the SANRAL issue is a challenge. You know, the user pay principle needs to apply, and that's something I haven't got on the slide, but it's a fact. And obviously, in terms of decisions, in terms of RP 2010, for what needs to be done beyond Kusile, those decisions are critical to ensure the success going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, for the presentation.
now going to invite members to questions, points of clarity, or just to raise their views on what you presented here. Before I, let me just raise my own few questions here. You know, you started by saying that you are not a construction company, but you manage contracts. There's something that is of a bit of concern to the committee, and that is, and I think it should be a concern to yourselves as well, that is, when there are, like I know we had some incidences in the past where people went on the rampage and burned property, you know, damaged property and so on. And each time we have this, it is not ESCOM workers. I think the latest as well, where people protesting because of the food that they were given. Whilst we accept that it is not your workers, but it affects. And ultimately this has some cost implications because of delays and so on. But we think it is very important that whilst you may not be responsible, directly responsible for the delays, but it raises the question about the kind of companies that you employ to do the work for you. You know, what are their, I mean, if you have people, we're not saying, and we don't want to get into that, whether or not the food was rotted. but I think it should be of interest to yourself as to how do these people treat their workers. I mean, now you know, I think, was it last year? Where we had it last year. I think ESCOM must proactively, and when you take proactive action, it is, who are these people that we are giving this contract? How do they treat their workers? You know, do they adhere to the Labor Relations Act and so on and so forth? Because it really affects, it actually undermines your own targets and so on. So, just thought we should raise that with you, because we can't give contracts to companies that actually flout our Labor Relations Act, or that treat workers like, you know, they are just objects and don't look at them as human beings. I'd also like to know what this foreign debt, what are the, I think there must be some implications for our country. What would these be? What are the negative implications, especially of this? Are we not, as a result of this, because we don't know what these contracts are stating? Are we not sacrificing some of our government positions that we, in taking these steps? You know, in the past you would have what would the World Bank call this? Restructuring? What was it? They give money to structural adjustment. Yeah, they'll give money to Zambia, and then, so almost like saying change your government. government. It is a condition of that aid that they give. So are we not going to tie the country into something that will actually make us slaves to these lenders? I'd also like to know, in real terms, you know, what are the, when I say in real terms, the amount of money that would say this has gone to your BEE company, how much of this money goes to foreign companies, how much goes to local companies, and in particular companies with a very strong BEE company. Okay, I think let me leave it there for the moment. And what I would like to say is that if you, and I'm not saying you must not answer all the questions that members have, but as you know, we will be visiting ESCOM very soon, and especially these sites. So just make note of that which you can't respond to now, so that when we visit, during our visit, we can also the response to the questions that you will have done today. Honorable Bong, Honorable Kuranov, Honorable Mukwena, Honorable Fululu, Honorable Mare, in that order. Honorable Sonto, you'll be the next.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to just add to where the Chairperson was in the concern that he has raised, and to say that I think I'm understanding the whole thing a lot better now, but where does the buck actually stop is what I want to add to that. Because you're managing 34 and 46, you know, all these projects now. If the wheels start falling off, who actually is responsible? I think that's just to add to what the Chairperson has already said. And then I want to perhaps pick up on this question of your planning. You talk about, and I think it's forward planning, you know, doing the whole plan, the total plan. And you're bringing on stream now, and it wouldn't have happened if the whole plan had been done originally. That's what I understood you to say. Now, what are some of the obstacles that we might find to this? Because it would seem to me that you're just going to be repeating stuff now. Are you repeating stuff, or are you not repeating stuff? Is it new kind of construction? That would be my other question. And then related to that would be, and I don't think any of us want to sort of see delays and problems arise along the way, and that's why we're here. We want to oversee that the money gets spent and it gets spent properly, and we get value for money. So my next part of the question would be the human resource in taking these projects to completion. And I think it's something we can be really proud of, I want to say, you know, that we are able to produce this. But what is the human capacity, that the skills, the people with the skills, and, you know, I see you're putting in welding training and so on like that, but do we have the proper skills, and are we going to be involved in perhaps bringing skills from outside that might cause a problem within? So I think that's where I'm really getting to with that question. And then it's just a comment. I'm really concerned, especially after what we've come through, and I think it's probably not for us, but this integrated resource plan, it concerns me that, you know, we haven't yet got, and we're just a few years off that plan already being, you know, in the course of our plans. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for a very good presentation, and I think we're all proud of, it's not Eskom's plan, it's our plan. It's a South African plan. And we're very proud, and we're all together in it. So my first question is not the delays that you spoke about, but the potential delays going forward. Especially with Medupi, we're finishing now Unit 6, if I understand you correctly. What are the potential contractual delays that you may want to talk about? Secondly, there may also be potential delays for the next unit, which is Unit 5, if I remember correctly. But if I understand it correctly, in our planning, the Unit 5, the design of Unit 5 is different from the Unit 6. Please explain that to me. Where did that occur that the design of the units are not the same? Because in future, when we get to maintenance, it's really maybe very problematic. As a matter of fact, if you complete Unit 6 and you go and do the next phase to complete Unit 5, talk to us about this, may need extra workforce. Maybe foreign skills to look at the different design, what we've just completed. So if you can just inform the committee whether you're going to need special skills to complete Unit 5 after we've done the Unit 6. Secondly, I'm really concerned when you tell us that about the capacity problem. I know where we come from, 2001 to 2005, no investment. We probably lost a lot of skills, but can you assure the committee that Eskom, the capacity problem at Eskom, you can manage, and that you have skills available? If I understand correctly, I don't know what your average experience is of your people at Eskom. Is it 3 years? Is it more than 3 years? Is it in terms of decades? Because if you don't invest, your people retire, people resign, or people get older, and then you sit with the old workforce. So if you can just talk to us about your capacity of Eskom and your skills availability. You mentioned thirdly, very briefly, about your safety record. Can I ask, do you have a specific appointed person responsible for safety in Eskom to look at your safety record? Do you have a unit to make sure that our people are not injured and on the job? Then my last question on this is a big spend in various areas of South Africa. What value do you add to local areas? We saw Lapalale when we visited. We're looking forward to see it again in 3 weeks' time. But what local content do you add to that area in terms of BEE in a place like Lapalale? Will we see that, and we're going to walk around and interact with people, do we really add value to local black economic empowerment in Lapalale, that we can really see people are benefiting? You say that you have a huge foreign debt, and it's exposed to foreign currency. Do you have a forward cover on that? We've seen other state-owned companies in the last couple of years, really got into serious financial difficulties because of this exposure to foreign debt. And not being covered. The last issue, Chairperson, and you haven't discussed it in this paper, but I'm going to ask it. We in a previous discussion we had with ESCOM, one of the problems was your involvement with municipalities. I just want to find out whether you have made progress to engage with municipalities, because some of the problems, I'm not going to mention provinces or towns, but you know as well as I do which we are referring to. Have you in the last year engaged with the municipalities to see that challenge that of non-payment to yourselves and the efficient use of electricity have been addressed? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we must thank ESCOM for a very comprehensive briefing on its build program. It is indeed a very daunting and awesome program of lofty and high-tech nature. That's the first point. General remark. Number two, the first question would be, why did you, ESCOM, stop the patrol committee from visiting you last time? Because you wanted to have inspection in situ, because our job is that of, among others, conducting oversight. When we heard that there were disturbances there, we wanted to go there as politicians, because, I mean, those people, majority of them are the voters. So if you say to an activist parliament, please don't come here, you then chop your hands off. We're not going to try and micromanage, but politically it's disturbing, because we are the shareholders, and we are a state-owned company. And if you say to the owner, despite what you read in the papers, despite what you hear, but please don't come anywhere in here, because I'm the manager and I know how best to handle the situation. We're just lucky that the situation did not get out of control, but no state enterprise should do that in the future. Prevent or delete some areas is no good areas for MPs. We must not do that. Next point is, you have now indicated to us that ESCOM is thankful to the shareholder, the government, for subordinating 8 billion of its dividend. That has enabled you to be more creditworthy to the sources that are funding you, that you're borrowing from. Now, some of us have been here from 1994. First time I came here in 1994, a proud ESCOM and a DPE person there showed us a check. We're still young parliamentarians on the street, that ESCOM is doing very well. He has a check of 60 million rand as a dividend to the state. Now, that was the last time I heard of a dividend. What has happened over the past 18 years? How many times did ESCOM declare dividend to the state before it embarked on this ambitious bill program, which obviously, understandably, would not make sense to declare dividend when you still want to raise capital? But before you started, and this is about 10 years ago, well, how many times did you declare a dividend to the state? Next point, quickly, is the your spend is a staggering 340 billion. Now, I want to match that against the quantum, the quantity of coal reserves we have in the country. Because what you need to do, obviously, you are a financial person, as a financial director, is to say, this is how much coal we have in the soil in South Africa, in the belt of South Africa. And it costs, it's varied at so much. And then you then juxtapose that to the money that we've laid out in order to find out if there'll be a deficit. Is the coal enough? to ban, to generate electricity to recover that money, or will we have to import coal from somewhere in the future? In other words, I want to have peace of mind that we are not overspending against what is not, what must not commensurate to the coal reserves. Next point. We as a British Coal Community have always been asking you, ESCOM, to organize a seminar on the science of coal, coal itself as a resource, to understand and unpack this coal and look at its potential. And then I would like to hope to stage a person. Two little last questions. We are quite aware that there's a big thrust in pushing nuclear energy. And the figures coming from there are just too imponderable compared to the 30 billion I talk about, 340 billion I talk about. It's huge. Now, we as parliamentarians want to be, we don't want to allow a situation where things just, we just get railroaded. And we have a situation where now there are huge financial commitments, that there are monstrous nuclear stations that are going to be built all over the country. Without having applied our minds to ensure that they are affordable. We've seen what happened with the PABMR, how it was just a push to have this thing happening. And of course, the wheels have come off now, and the rest is history, but we've lost 10 billion down the drain. Now, we want you as ESCOM to come up clearly and say, are you part of that nuclear thrust, or it's being pushed from elsewhere? And if so, we need to know what it is, so now we can, apprise ourselves of that development. Finally, the independent power producers don't appear to feature there. So ESCOM is this huge monolithic producer, as we said, EPCL. And then, I would like to see him as a reverse. But I mean, in your the ESCOM Act that founded you, when you've now rebranded yourself as an EPCM now, the Engineering Procurement Management Construction Company, and not what the entity said must be. Was the shareholder put on board or taken on board, or you just decided from a managerial point of view, this is now how we must recast and remodel ourselves? So there should be no contradiction between, because you are parliamentary, and you are delivering in terms of a particular mandate from the Act. The Act says do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And down the line, you then wisely see that it would be better if you restructured and build yourself. But that must not be, that does not contradict the primary objective. The last one, the green energy. The green energy is number green, Chairperson. The alternative energy. And that's linked to the coal science and the resource that we have. So let's assume that, Chairperson, the coal reserves that we have are not adequate to match the repayment and the sustainability. We have an opportunity right now to latch on to the alternative energy, the green energy, which should be brought on stream so that it can assist us in the respect of sustainability of supply of electricity. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. Clarity-seeking questions, actually. Let me first thank the presentation from ESCOM. And then can we just turn on page 5 of the presentation on the third bullet. That is the corporate overview. We are one of the top 20 utilities in the world by generating capacity, 41,194 megawatts. We generate 95% of the electricity used in SA and about 45% of that used in Africa. My question actually around this one, Chair, is the, I see that 45% is going to the African continent, and then the rest, which I'll assume it's about forty percent, which in total it gives me something like 95%. I see there's that 5% there that is, I don't see where it goes to. I don't know if you follow my question. I'm just interested in the 5% there. Okay, that was the first one. The second one, it's on the, with the construction of these two big, largest power stations in the world, are we contemplating in future to electrify the remainder of the percentage? Because I'm not sure currently as to how many percent is electrified, especially the rural electrification program. Where do we see ourselves there after completing these two largest power stations? How many percentage of the rural electrification are we going to see through? That's the second one. We are currently building the largest power stations in the world that would be added to the national grid. Upon completion of these projects, what will our reserve margin look like as compared to the current one, which is very, very low, which I don't think it exceeds 5%. It's very, very low. I just wanted to get a sense as to how much, what to call. The last one, Chair, it's on the power stations themselves. We all know that these power stations that we have currently in the country, the lifespan is about 50 years. What is the lifespan of these power stations that we currently build in Kusile and Medupi and Ingula as well? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to state before I start that I'm a new member to this committee, so I maybe have some facts wrong and I'm not updated, so I'll just say it up front. First, I want to say it's pretty promising to hear that you actually secured 77% of your capital outlay, and that you actually know that the other 23% where you can get it international. I sort of make this remark that it's always bad for electricity Eskom per se to have negative publicity, in the sense, because if there's a tariff rise, it is the same like petrol. It immediately the impact on the consumer's pocket. So that's one thing you must understand in communities. I just want to get clarity, because a lot of things have already been asked by the other members, but if the new form of electricity in sense of solar or even wind or coming on the grid, are they by law forced to sell it to you? They must come through your grid, and they must, the price, is it fixed by NERSA for municipalities? Or is there a way, maybe, that a municipality, for example, can negotiate directly with one of these new forms of electricity that's been generated? And I'll give you another example, because municipalities is on constraint, big constraint in a sense, because their markup actually is now smaller than previously it is smaller. And that was one of the income streams of a municipality. And it make it very difficult. And I'll just give an example for you now, and then one comes from the other members now, but in the case of Sodana Municipality, because that's my constituency, there's coming a new industrial development zone, and there's now a direct, let me put it, right negotiated by factories or something coming up there, and the income stream of the municipality is now becoming lower. And because they get the rebates on what is actually negotiated. But the impact of those factories and everything coming up there have an impact on other things of the municipality, like the roads and infrastructure that we must pay for as a municipality. So we've got a problem there, and I would really love to go in a conversation about maybe NERSA together with ESCOM on that specific area, for example. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. An emphasis on the on some of the questions raised. I think ESCOM is I must commend them for the presentation. But one would want to check on slide 19. In fact, let me start off by the fear we might be having on currency fluctuations, that over dependency on foreign debt. I think we should be explained there whether that is not, in fact, an arrangement that would hit us on the foot or something like that. The second one would be on slide 19. I see there is a one would say is a bold kind of a venture into that. But let us just look back on the backdrop of us having challenges on capacity. How open are we to foreign interference? I'm being kind of, I'm not being blunt on this one. As a country, how open are we that we do not have capacity, or that we have got some challenges in capacity when we are building such projects? How open are we to foreign interference? There were times when, as a country, we wanted to embark on certain projects, and we would find foreigners stationed in IE in our infrastructures. Now I'm cautious in asking this question, but I would want a response. You would see how dearly one would want to be taken to safety in so far as that is concerned. Because when we wanted to, was it after the World Cup? What was it? I can't remember the event. But there was a possibility that some foreigners were in our units to sabotage us. And extraordinary measures had to be taken to prevent that. Now, one would want to understand how safe are we, especially when we say boldly that we will keep the lights on for all South Africa, for all of South Africa. Okay. Chairperson, would be that we are embarking on these projects and programs. We had a challenge around our management and procurement environments, and there were irregularities that we were still investigating as ESCOM. How far are we, and how are we navigating between those when we are embarking on these big or largest projects that we are talking about here? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Chairman. Thank you, and members. obviously some of them I'll need to get the detail, but I'll certainly pick up the ones I can. I think your concern around the strikes, and it was raised, and the labor, and where does the buck stop, is very valid. The buck stops with Eskom. And within Eskom, it stops with the chief executive and myself. So we're very, very aware of what you're saying. We do have what we think is quite a world-class way of running these projects, in that we have a project labor agreement, a standardized project labor agreement that all the contractors sign up to. So all the terms and conditions in terms of working hours, safety, food, etc., is agreed upon with all the contractors. But that doesn't mean there's not issues. So we're very aware of those, and we continually engage with our contractors to make sure that these issues don't arise. Because if you talk about the risks going forward, it's a significant risk for us, that because these programs can get delayed if this is not managed. So the buck stops with us. So we're very aware of it, and make sure that we get involved adequately. In terms of the foreign debt, there were a number of questions, and I need to say, because 2010 we presented to a number of committees on the World Bank loan in particular, and I need to say that this is not a structural loan. It is a commercial loan that has been given, and that goes for the African Development Bank, which is the other large foreign loan, and then the export credits, which we get are very commercial orientated. So there are no requirements in terms of those, in terms of covenants, in terms of anything that means there's any influence over Eskom or certainly the country. The foreign debt is a challenge, though, because we can't raise all the money in the country, we are exposed to foreign exchange fluctuation. So what we do is, in Eskom, we've got a very conservative policy. Everything over 50,000 Rand, we hedge. So as and when we draw down on these foreign loans, we hedge it out. So our exposure is limited in that aspect. But as and when you draw down in the future, you're going to be subject to some fluctuation. As an example, today as we sit, our Forex book in Rand terms is over 30 billion Rand. That's massive. And certainly in terms of the capacity of the country. In terms of planning, obstacles to planning, RP 2010, I agree with you that it is a concern and we need decisions. I don't think we're repeating the mistakes we made, in that we're trying to build up the skills, particularly in the project management, the construction management, the planning, the estimating. Those are the skills that we didn't have in the beginning, and those are what we're trying to build up to make sure we don't continue with the mistakes going forward. One of the members said, can we give the assurance on our capacity? Unfortunately, we can't. We have at Eskom, in the Eskom group, over 43,000 people today. And when we look at our critical and core skills, whether it be from an operator to a planner to an estimator, we have a shortage. And if you looked at the age profile of Eskom, and we can share that with the committee when they visit, I would describe it as a wave. So between the ages of mid-40 and above, there's a large percentage, and between the ages from 20 to, say, 30, and in between, so you've got this. And that's our challenge. How do you bridge that gap? A young workforce and an older workforce, and nothing in between. So we're very aware of it. We're very aware of where the skills are developed in our pipeline in Eskom. We work very closely with the Department of Public Enterprise. We have over 6,000 people in our pipeline. We committed to the department in the current year in terms of the youth program. These are people with matric who can't get jobs. We hired 5,000 of those. We're putting those through the program. And we're working very closely with the Department of Public Enterprise to make sure we can help address this. But I can't give you any assurance that we don't have a skill shortage in Eskom. I can't give you that assurance. I can give you the assurance that we know where our skills are lacking, and we have a better idea of what we need. That's the only assurance I can give. In terms of safety, it's number one priority in Eskom. We have consolidated our safety under one leadership in Eskom. So we have a designated individual, but we're all accountable for safety across all the line divisions. And in this last year, in terms of contractors and employees, we had 25 fatalities. That's just not acceptable. That's just not acceptable for Eskom. So we're doing everything. And that was not in the capacity expansion program. That was in all the other areas of Eskom. The local area we get this challenge often. When you go to Lepalala, you will be astounded by the schools. You will be astounded by the ancillary services that get offered. And there is a large local content of our labor force that comes from the local area. The real problem is the sustainability. A Matimba power station, and Thomas can maybe help me, he's more technical. A Matimba power station at most has 800 to 1,000 people. A Medupi will have the same. So when you're going from a peak workforce of, say, 15,000 people down to only 800 to 1,000 that you need, where do the rest go? And that's the significant challenge, I think, not only Eskom faces, but the entire country faces. So it's something we haven't worked out yet, and we need to. And that's why at Eskom we believe if you can make the decisions on IRP 2010, you can at least not do this, what we've done since the 1950s, 40s, is stop, start in the build. You need to have this incremental build, this national plan of how you can keep going. So you don't just stop at any point in time. So we need to look at that as a country. I don't think it's an Eskom only problem. Municipalities, that's a very interesting question. Both of those questions, we, through the Minister of Public Enterprises, we have had significant engagements across the country with municipalities, led by the Minister. If I put my financial hat on for a moment, the municipalities mark up on Eskom's tariff, depending on the municipality, from 25% to over 100%. So our tariff can be doubled, and that's what the user would feel. And I don't think that's sustainable, and I do hear what you're saying, but that's the income stream. So unfortunately, I'm not close enough to the municipality funding model and the revenue model of a municipality, but I'd suggest that that's something that needs to be attended to. In terms of our debt, it does get bad at some stage during the year. We had 700 million rand overdue, but at year end it came down to under 300 million because as National Treasury gives the grants, etc., we get paid. So I think there's no doubt that in our MYPD3 we're going to be asking for increases. I mean, I think we've said that. How's the municipality model going to work and what the pressure? So I think it's a very good issue that needs to be addressed. Unfortunately, I can't answer why the portfolio committee. I will certainly take that up and we'll discuss that at Eskom. I don't know why the portfolio committee was halted in visiting. Eskom is extremely thankful to government. Why? Government gave us 350 billion of guarantees. There's no other company in the economy that has that sort of support. They also, prior to the dividend that they sacrificed for the current year, have also given us a subordinated loan of 60 billion rand to help us fund because we had no reserves. In terms of the dividends, the only thing I can relate to is Eskom was converted to a company in 2001. So when it was a council before that, I don't know how monies were moved around, but certainly there's been very few dividends out of Eskom because 2001 to 2005, it's when it started to plan for its build program. And in fact, we have an agreement with the shareholder that whilst we're in building, there'll be a moratorium on dividends. So we've certainly not given money back. In terms of the coal is a serious challenge. We have up until 2018, secured 80% of our coal requirements. After that, it gets less and less every year. This country has more than enough coal to support all of Eskom's power stations, whether you extend all their lives to 50 years. And this is the challenge we as a country need to fix, because we have this competition between export and what Eskom needs to have, and then the tariff. And, you know, we've been, I think, quite vocal about better control in the coal industry to make sure that Eskom gets adequate coal, adequate quality at the right price. And so we think there has to be a change in the regulation, the legislation around that.
I was told by one of the new guys that the quantity of coal reserves that we have in South Africa is so abundant, in some staggering 48 billion, you see, tons, as we see it. South Africa has got coal reserves to the tune of 48 billion tons. Just to keep it in the top of mind, so now when we have the chairperson, we facilitate that seminar myself, that workshop on the coal science, we should all have all these facts put together and match them against what you're saying at the moment, that the coal reserves, Eskom has got access to coal at 2080, which is just 6 years from here. But then our commitment is for another 50 years. That's very critical. Thanks.
No, that's right. We've heard similar numbers. One of the issues we have is that Eskom is not a mining company, and it can get no mining rights. So we can't mine our own coal. So we're dependent on somebody else to mine our coal. Some of the larger mining companies in the world want a return. They're not prepared to invest in a coal mine at a 10% return. They want 20%. That starts to make coal unaffordable. So these are the challenges we face. In terms of nuclear, it's massive. I can't give you a commitment on a number other than it's significant capital cost. And at the moment, all we can do as Eskom is, together with our shareholder, is look at how the RP 2010 needs to be rolled out. And at the moment, nuclear is there. So I can't really comment on a DOE and government decision to say that nuclear needs to be part of the space. But it is expensive, as are renewables. In terms of the IPPs, when the RP 2010 was published, there was an estimation that Eskom would do about 65% of the new build beyond Kusile, and the IPPs 35%. So that's where the split is, and IPPs would be mainly against the renewables. But as we said, there's been no decisions. I agree with your comment. There's a massive industry opportunity on green energy, and Eskom supports that. We can create significant industry in the country. 45% in Africa, I think it's a little bit misleading now that I read it again. It's really only ourselves and Egypt who have the majority of the capacity in South Africa. So if you add the two of us together, it gives you the entire African continent. So it's not as though we export 45% to Africa. We are a net exporter, but it's very little amount. It's not small. It's not large at all. It's very tiny. I think it's a net 1,500 megawatts out of the 40,000. It's not a lot. The electrification is a challenge. Our electrification program is not in our tariff. Our electrification program relies on grants from the Department of Energy. And together with our shareholder is one of the areas we're addressing for the MYPD3. We as Eskom believe we need to accelerate electrification. It's not going quick enough. There's still millions of households who don't get electricity. But it requires money, and we need to work out that formula of where does that money come from, because it's not in our tariff. In terms of the reserve margin, provided the demand grows at around our estimates between 2 and 3%, in terms of electricity demand, we'll be over a 20% margin by the time we finish Kusile. Lifespan of Medupi Kusile is 40 years to 50 years, so it's in line with the other stations we have. I think we spoke about the municipalities, foreign debt, foreign interference. The only issue I can say on that is all our power stations are national key points. And we have very tight security in Eskom. And certainly all of senior management and, in fact, all of management go through various national intelligence checks. And so at this stage, I understand what you're saying, but at this stage it's certainly a risk that we see, but we have strict and stringent controls in place at Eskom around that issue. Understand. Sorry.
Honorable Mukwena's question as to why were we not allowed to visit Kutile? No, not Kutile, Medupi. Yeah, that was, and it was during the COP17 conference. So. You may.
Thank you. Sorry, I forgot one question, and that was around the design, and that's a very good question. There's 12 boiler units between Medupi and Kusile, and our strategy at the time was we wanted the same contractor to do all 12 of the units because it made sense, because it can become repeatable and you can get a better price. We did the same for the turbines. Unfortunately, the way it's panned out, because we went on virtual design, and because of the performance of our boiler contract, and Europe is experiencing this as well, the first time we will have the same design will be Medupi 3 will be the same as Kusile 2, and then it'll be the same. So you're going to have four units that are different. From a maintenance perspective, my understanding, it doesn't create any additional maintenance challenges. Because at Eskom, in all the boilers that we have, we've got a variety of manufacturers. But there's another area in this country where perhaps we don't have enough skills. Localization is in the original equipment manufacturers who you are required to come and do the maintenance on your boilers. Is we haven't localized those probably enough, so that we have our own industry of boiler making, boiler fixing, boiler maintenance. And I think the last question was the management and procurement environment. On the procurement environment, we're a massive company. We spend capital and goods and services 120 billion rand per annum. Last year, 75% of that was local content, 75%. In fact, triple BEE certified. Now, the challenges in a company of 120 billion rand is we do, despite what people may allude to, is we have very tight governance in Eskom, and we have tight control in Eskom. And I can't say to you today that there isn't fraud that would go on within a company of this size. But to the best of our knowledge and the best of our ability, we are not aware of anything of significance. And we monitor and manage that on a very tight basis. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think there's probably two questions which I want to just to add. One was on around slide 19, which is on the space which was sent through as to. If you look into that package, you see there, it reflects a particular dynamic which is not really what we want to see, and talks to the shortage of competent contractors who can do this function in the country. If you look well, you will see that most of them are not purely South Africans in majority. Therefore, there's a need for us to say, as we then take a decision on the RP going forward, how do we leverage in, from this area, ensure that our local teams are able to come into the space, as opposed to benefit on the auxiliary services, instead of dealing with the real issues which are in the energy space. Caught the attention of the minister to an extent that he has even instructed the department to undertake an independent assessment to look on what needs to be done differently going forward on leveraging local economic development and local companies development out of the Eskom build program as we move forward. The last aspect is probably is around the verification question, which I need, just need to add to what Paul has just raised. Is that understanding that we have got 2.8 household, million households which are not have access to electricity. Both as the shareholder of Eskom and the Department of Energy and National Treasury has set a steering committee to look at what needs to be done differently to accelerate that access to that energy by those who have always been deprived over this long period. And that talks mostly around our special places, which are like your Limpopo, Eastern Cape, KZN, which has got mountainous issues, which you might not have access to the grid, but you must then be able to use off-grid options, which you need to find ways and how best you can do it as we move forward. And I think that's what we'll be prioritizing, but we'll come back probably jointly with the energy to come and brief as to what have we done in this. The last issue, Chair, is on the nuclear, because the nuclear aspect is in everyone's mouth these days. We need to talk and communicate what is that we're doing on the nuclear. What we've given Eskom to do as the shareholder department was that Eskom must undertake the developmental functions relating to procurement of the land, undertaking of the studies required, and then the National Nuclear Energy Executive Committee chaired by the Deputy President, when it has set and decide what is the path we are taking on the nuclear, we must not go and start to try to go and locate the land and then be able to go and undertake the same studies. We must say it has been done, then your role as Eskom is this one, the role of other entities will be this one, and that's why we say that that's the role why we have not talk about the full quantum of over a trillion on the nuclear, and but only talk about the small billions which are going to play around the nuclear program in the meantime. Thanks.
I think this now brings us to the end of this part of our meeting. I'm going to request members to remain behind. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mr. Flaherty, and the team from Eskom and the department. Really appreciate it.